At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
A reporter finds himself on a text string of highly sensitive correspondence between some of our nation's top leaders. What should we know about his report, and what should we consider about how he reported it? It's the topic we're going to tackle today. I'm Jenna, and this is Smarter News. So today we're going to do something a little bit different. I want to give you a reporter's notebook. This is a more personal perspective. We call it a reporter's notebook when we're doing stories like this because it's more casual. It's like I'm reading off my notes of a story, just sort of my observations and things I'm thinking about as a journalist instead of thinking about it simply as a reporter. On Monday, we received a really big headline from The Atlantic. The Atlantic is a magazine publication that's been around for a long time, has a big reputation for a lot of major news stories. And it read this. This is the title of the article: "The Trump Administration Accidentally Texted Me Its War Plans." Okay, so again, that's the headline. The author is a man by the name of Jeffrey Goldberg. He's the editor-in-chief of The Atlantic. He's worked for this magazine, this media platform, for some time. And so when I first saw this, without even reading the story, a few things just went through my mind. You know, what in the world is Jeffrey Goldberg actually talking about? What's in that text thread that he's talking about? And what did he actually share? What are the facts or the evidence that are included in this story? The Atlantic has a reputation of sharing a more progressive perspective, but it invests in reporting projects that many outlets do not these days, which have led to some really incredible stories. In fact, I just read one this weekend. In their recent edition, there's this big deep dive on the Murdoch family empire. So this is Rupert Murdoch and his sons. And this reporter spent months and months and months on this story. And as I flipped through the magazine, I actually had the hard copy. I thought, wow, you know, you don't get to read stories like this anymore. There's an investment in reporting here. Sure, there's more of a liberal perspective than conservative, but most publications, you know, newspapers, magazines, digital platforms, all have a slight bend to their editorial process. And that doesn't mean we can't appreciate them. We just have to be aware of it. So this was kind of percolating in my mind. It does mean, though, that as I'm looking at this and considering the source, that I'm already assuming that there's a likelihood that this report is going to be critical rather than just explanatory, that there is going to be something a little bit more critical for the Trump administration. The background here matters, too. Jeffrey Goldberg has a really powerful reputation. He's wildly respected. He mainly focuses on, or focused in the past, on foreign policy. He's a journalist that a lot of people want to talk to. He gets a lot of scoops, and he moves in and out of the inner circles, inner power circles. You know, he's an insider in Washington, D.C. politics. So he has good sources, and he reports stories that matter, tend to really matter. So in short, this is what his story describes. So that's what I was kind of thinking about as I'm approaching this story. This is just based on my experience as a journalist. I've looked at some of these stories from The Atlantic and used them in my reporting. I've interviewed in the past Atlantic journalists. And so I'm kind of thinking about this as now I'm diving into the story. And so what his story is describing is that he was somehow added to a text string created by the National Security Advisor, Mike Walls. And the text string is apparently with a lot of our top leaders, including the Secretary of Defense, the Vice President, the Secretary of State, you know, all the big guys. And not just guys, by the way, Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, the Chief of Staff for the President, Susie Wiles. So, I mean, these are all some of the most important people when it comes to American leadership right now. And what they're talking about, according to Goldberg, is attacking the Houthis. The Houthis is a terrorist group based in Yemen. The Houthis have attacked shipping lanes in and around Yemen in support of Hamas. The Houthis are supported by Iran. So this is what this group is discussing, this impending attack that's going to take place on the Houthis. By the way, that attack that started, you know, a while ago, probably about a week ago now, is continuing. So I don't want to lose sight of that story. It's actually ongoing, this attack, but this is before it even started. And as Jeffrey Goldberg describes, He was being added to a Signal channel. So Signal is a commercially available messaging platform that supposedly encrypts your messages or protects them in some way. You know, I've used Signal before. It is like text messaging someone. I've used it with sources. To be honest, it's kind of a pain. It's supposed to protect you from anyone spying on you, but it's still a public platform. You know, you can get a Signal account. I can have a Signal account. We can send each other messages on Signal. It doesn't have to be that we have to be a government official. So it's not special for the government. It's not special for government material or government business. And that is one of the issues here. So Goldberg finds himself strangely on this text chain. And there's several issues here, many of them. Here's one. How did a journalist get added to this text string? And how did anyone not see that? But more broadly, at the core of every story is a real basic question. And the basic question is, how safe are we? Do actions like this by our leaders, you know, using a commercially available platform to exchange information that Goldberg is describing as war plans, put Americans and American security at risk? I mean, that's the core of this story. You know, how safe are we? Are our leaders keeping us safe? One of the focuses that Goldberg is taking on this piece is he's asking that question. How do these actions, how does the use of this platform impact national security? And as he's asking this question, he doesn't reveal all the content of the text that he saw. He does screenshot several of them that seem to be more mild exchanges, but still expose the point of view of some of these leaders and some of the back and forth, but just not the details of the actual attacks themselves, which Jeffrey Goldberg describes as being pretty specific. And by the way, for me, that presents a little bit of a challenge just reporting this story to you, because we have to distrust his description. I can't fact check him. You know, I used the word earlier that he alleged certain content, but the more accurate way of describing it is he's reporting it this way. I just can't double or triple source him. The White House has now admitted that this exchange, this text string is real, but we haven't gone line by line. And he's been sort of general in how he's describing some of what he read. And so that just presents a little bit of a problem because, again, there's no way for me to double source what he's saying. We just have to take his word for it. There's no reason not to believe him, but it is a single source. And I just think it's important that you know that. Jeffrey Goldberg says he feels he had access to classified information, war plans. You know, officials disagree with that. We heard that a little bit today on Capitol Hill because there was a hearing and there's going to be another one on Wednesday about worldwide threats. So you have some of these top national security officials testifying on Capitol Hill, and now they're getting a ton of questions about this. And they are affirming that this isn't classified information that they were exchanging. Now, we'll see if that's the case. From a political or legal perspective, one of the questions I'm asking is, where does this story go from here? You know, politicians can ask for these texts to see if they can prove that classified material was shared in an unclassified setting or in an unprotected way. And therefore, these officials, these Trump officials, have broken the law and should perhaps face consequences. I mean, we could go down that route of the story, which is pretty likely. I mean, there's always a chance that a story sort of dissipates, but this one's going to be a tough one to go away because it's pretty juicy. Someone went behind the scenes where they weren't supposed to be. And for Democrats, it gives them something to talk about, something to point to say, hey, listen, these people that we already raised questions about, their experience or their know-how, are doing things that are not keeping the country safe. And that's really, again, at the core of this is that question, are these actions using this commercially available platform making America less safe? And is it emblematic of a bigger issue that we should be aware of? The big question for me here is just how outraged the public really is about this and how much this matters to you and your friends and your family. It may really matter to the media. It may really matter to insiders in Washington, D.C. The question is, how much does it matter to the public? And that's also going to determine, you know, where this story goes from here. The way that Jeffrey Goldberg covered this is very interesting and brings up a lot of questions when it comes to journalism, which is something I love to talk about. And there's a lot of different angles here. So he shares that he shares some of these texts, as I mentioned. He shares some of the screenshots, but he doesn't detail a lot. And he says he's trying to protect some valuable information, that he doesn't believe that some of these details are in the public interest. And that's really key phrasing. It's not in the public interest. As a journalist, When I look at stories, my editorial perspective is always about their value to you. How much does this story impact you? How much is it in the public interest? How much can I represent you to get more information that's in the public interest? So Jeffrey Goldberg determined that some of this information, for example, what he described as, you know, locations of bombings or targets, was not in the public interest. That is information that should stay with the government, but that the fact that these text exchanges were happening on this platform in this way was in the public interest to know about. So he's drawing that line. This shows some editorial choice and some discipline, because if he really wanted to, he could probably just share it all to prove what he's saying. But there is a risk in that. For me and for other journalists, that could potentially cross a line, because there is an ethics involved that sharing classified information may not only be illegal, you could get in trouble for that, for breaking the law or sharing classified information, but that it can also be unethical, that there is a line between helping the public and hurting the public in order to prop yourself up or try to give your story more interest. And sometimes that can be hard to determine. In this particular case, based on what Jeffrey Goldberg has described, it seems that he is trying to be responsible with that information. And I would point that out to you. That's part of the reason why he's withholding some of these details. Although now that some of the officials are pushing back on those details, I wonder if he releases some of it just to prove what he's saying is correct, and that perhaps to cast more doubt on what they're saying, that this is not classified information. So we'll see. That's going to be something key. He could release just a snippet of it, a slice of it, and not all of it. And that'll be something that we'll have to watch for. You know, I found myself reflecting on my past when I heard about this story and Jeffrey Goldberg's editorial decision about what to share and what not to share. I was thinking about my grandfather. My grandfather was a war correspondent for the Associated Press in World War II, and he was embedded overseas. And I actually have his old handbook. And one of the things that the handbook says, the handbook is a series of guidance for journalists on all sorts of things. And so I actually have some of it printed out. I'm going to put it on the screen for you. This is one particular entry that I've always found really interesting. So again, this is given to journalists during World War II, during wartime, and this is their guidance for censorship of articles for publication. And it says the following: in general, articles may be released for publication to the public provided, one, they are accurate in statement and implication. They have to be factual. Number two, they do not supply military information to the enemy. You're not giving up secrets that the enemy is going to use. Number three, they will not injure the morale of our forces, the people at home, or our allies. Think about this for a second. They will not injure the morale of our forces. You're not supposed to report things that's going to injure the morale of our forces, the people at home, or our allies. Number four, they will not embarrass the United States as allies or neutral countries. The reason why I think about this handbook is that it is very explicit about not sharing secrets and not basically sharing classified information and making sure that you're protecting Americans, including our military forces, by not oversharing those things in your effort to report. So as a journalist, I believe Jeffrey Goldberg actually made the right decision here. He shared what happened. He did not share some of these specific details that he himself was worried about, he had questions about. And so in that way, the way that he describes it, it appears from the limited information that we have that he made the right call. Now, let's talk a little bit about some of the questions that you had. One of the questions you asked, and I put it out there on social media, you know, what are some of the questions you have about this story? One of you asked, is there any reason code of ethics that he, Jeffrey Goldberg, should have disclosed who he was or left the chat? You know, raised his hand and said, hey, guess what? Like, I shouldn't be here. It's a great question. Yes and no when it comes to ethics. So he said he didn't actually think this was a real text exchange. He thought maybe it was a mistake, or maybe it was a spoof, or maybe it was a disinformation campaign. I mean, why would these people put him on this text? So when he suddenly realized it was real and that what was being written was then several hours later being carried out overseas, you know, he was stunned and kind of was working through it, he says. This is how he's kind of describing it. It was just sort of unbelievable, he describes it. So he watched, he listened, he saw it was a story And eventually he did leave the group. And he does say in his reporting that he reached out to some of these key people, including Mike Walls, for a response. It seems like in the way that he wrote it in the article, what he probably did, and I don't know this for sure, but again, this is the reporter's notebook. What he would probably do is say, hey guys, I had this piece. It's going to be published by noon Eastern time. You have 3 hours to respond. You have 1 hour to respond. You have 30 minutes to respond to this and try to get a response that way, in order to pressure some of these individuals to say something. We don't get a lot in the article, but in the hours that have now followed, we're getting some more from the administration. There is an argument. I think there is a good argument to say, well, you know, he could have left immediately and still asked many of the same questions that he's asking right now. It's probably more of a gentlemanly thing to do. It's pretty juicy. So it's hard to say, oh yeah, I'll just like not lurk in the background. But once he realized it was real, he could have announced himself and then also left. He could have announced himself sooner. And let's talk a little bit about why strategically he would do that. Here's another one of your questions. What is the appropriate security approved method of group chats within the government? It's a great question. And in general, you're not supposed to use commercially available texts and emails for government business. You're not going to be on your Gmail account talking about what's going on behind closed doors. You're not supposed to share that information. You know, when my husband was active duty military and he was deployed overseas, we had to be really careful in email. Sure, he wrote me on his Yahoo account, but he could not share anything. He was very, very careful about anything that he put in email because he get in huge trouble. He could even get fired. So there are some questions about double standards here of whether or not if you have lower ranking people, whether or not they would get immediately in trouble for something like this and could actually be forced to resign or be fired from their positions. It's a fair question to ask because this can potentially be a very serious offense. There's some debate over how much of an offense it is amongst those that partook in it, but just in general, you're not supposed to do this. There's something called a SCIF, a sensitive compartmented information facility. This is a secure room that you can go into, read classified documents, top secret documents, things like that. You can actually have a SCIF built in your house, in whether you have an office, for example. So different officials can actually have a SCIF that's available to them. And that's where you're supposed to go to basically discuss things like this. One of the issues here is that technology has changed a lot. So maybe that's part of the broader question, which is with the change of technology, how do we update some of the ways that we communicate and communicate securely? And finally, one of you asked, you're curious how I might have approached the Signal story and what texts I might have released. It's a really great question. You know, I would like to believe that I would have spoken up sooner and asked questions about the correspondence not being secured and used it as a way to build relationships, something to the effect of like, clearly I'm not supposed to be on this text, or am I supposed to be on this text? I have some questions about this. Mike Walls, I'm following up with you. Pete Hegseth, I'm following up with you. Tulsi Gabbard, I'm following up with you. By the way, Vice President, have a couple questions about what you said about this plan and done some reporting from there. Again, that would be difficult to do, but once you realize you're not supposed to be privy to this information, I would not feel good staying in the chat. I just wouldn't. I don't think I could. Again, it might have been an opportunity to realize it was a mistake and to do some further reporting, because perhaps there's even a bigger story here that we're missing because we're looking at the mythology behind it rather than what are the other big stories about, you know, what, for example, is happening in Yemen, or what other concerns should we have about national security? You know, I think there is a broader question here about how pervasive the use of Signal is and how secure it is for government officials. So I do have some questions about that. Here's a question that I don't think that we have answered that I believe should be asked. And if I was speaking with Jeffrey Goldberg, this is the question I would ask him. Right now, it appears that what he saw on this text string is consistent with public information. So that there's nothing that was revealed here. I mean, there were some details and such of where these attacks happened, who was targeted. But in general, it appears that the public knows about these attacks and that there's not a sleight of hand, meaning that what we're seeing publicly about the United States trying to target the Houthis is also what we're seeing discussed privately, that there's no daylight there. And if that's consistent, I think that's important for you to know. If it's not consistent, I think there's a big story there. And I found myself wondering, I know there's a lot of focus on the Houthis. I know that there's these targets in Yemen. I know this is a terrorist group. But by the way, there's other terrorist groups operating in this area. For example, Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. That was a very powerful branch of Al-Qaeda that has plotted and attempted to attack the United States in a myriad of different ways. So again, from Yemen, from far away. And I couldn't help but wonder, like, are all these targets the Houthis targets, or are there some other targets there and other people that are being targeted that maybe we don't know about? Is there something else going on that the public isn't aware of that was revealed in this text string? And that's what I want to know. And that's where we don't have some of these details. And I think that's important. So I do have that question. I think with this story, it's bringing up kind of a broader question in journalism and media and leadership in general, is that we're used to a very aggressive, adversarial political press. And when you're expecting that, and there's also a distrust of those in power, it creates a further lack of confidence in our leaders and a further lack of confidence in journalism. And I'm concerned about that. So stories like this don't help either side. You know, it doesn't help the public believe in journalists more. It doesn't help the public believe in leadership more. And so I really believe in journalism. I believe in the power of the story. I believe that the people should be prioritized. And right now, this seems to be a story between the press and the politicians. And I'm wondering where we prioritize the American public in this. So how do we bring this story back to a question of how safe are we? And how should we be thinking about our national security? So I do think this story matters for that reason. The politics aside, and some of the decisions when it comes to the press aside, I do think that's a really important story. So we'll continue to follow it. Again, I would like to think that I would have stepped forward sooner. It's hard to step away when a story falls in your lap, but you always have to wonder when it's that easy, what's the bigger story that you might be missing? So we'll see. I'll let you know. If I get added to anybody's text string these days, you better believe I'm coming to you first about it. I'm like, I should be on Signal right now. That could have been me. Anyhow, I think the chances of that are a lot less midweek this week after this big story broke. So anyhow, it's always important to, in the news and in reporting, to think about something bigger than yourself. It's not just about the scoop. It's about, well, what is, again, the bigger question and how do we serve the public? And I never want to lose sight of that. So just some thoughts. I'm going to put this article from my granddad in a place so you could see it. I think it's really interesting to see in black and white. And yeah, a lot of things to consider here. So thank you for your support. A quick, concise, nonpartisan news. This is a little longer than normal, but again, a bit of a peek behind the scenes, a reporter's notebook on some of these editorial decisions made and some of the content that we're just learning about. And certainly this is still very much a developing story. So keep you posted. Have a great day. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.